you've tapped or clicked in to College Volleyball Weekly on Viral Volley Media. Now here's your host, Rob on mic.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to episode 15 of the 2024 NCAA men's volleyball season. We've got College Volleyball Weekly men's top 20 from at least my left all the way down to the bottom right would be Jay Hossick of George Mason, Theo Edwards of CSUN, Brad Rostrater of UC San Diego, and if we are as so blessed, we will see Dan Fran of Lewis, who I don't blame him for not coming on. They start playoffs this week, but that's another story we will talk about. But we always like to start with the elephant in the room, talk about each teams and how they did in this last week of play. So we're going to start with Brad this time. We'll go West Coast to East Coast.
All right. We had an interesting week with our schedule, with how we set things up. Our week where we play Santa Barbara is this week, but because San Diego and Santa Barbara are the two furthest teams apart, driving distance, that is in Hawaii, in the Big West, we break it up a little bit more. So we play at the start of the Big West play, and then we get in to our week of regular competition this week. So we were up at Rob Gym on Friday, and we had a battle. First set, we played really, really well, and then Jess Bianchi went on a 8-point serving run to make it 25-22 that we ended up winning. The set, but it definitely got a little hairier and a little scarier there. And then set two, we kind of just didn't play too clean or too great, and they ended up making some good adjustments, and their middles started performing a little bit and getting some production there. And then set two and three, Santa Barbara played really well and ended up winning those. We were able to fight back in the fourth, and then in the fifth set, Walmer went on a little bit of a serving run, and there's the match. So a tough, hard fought loss in five for us, but definitely some positives and definitely some things we're excited for heading into this week.
Good stuff, Brad. And let's say hi to Dan Friend of Lewis, who's coming in after I'm probably taking Ray to school or something.
Something. Yeah, we're going something. How about that?
We're going west to east in our elephant in the room. So we're going to go to Theo because Brad just finished up. So CSUN took on the number one ranked Long Beach State, the Beach, twice this weekend. Fill us in.
Yeah, it was actually a pretty awesome week in terms of volleyball. Long Beach is number one. There is an absolute reason for it. I thought they played incredibly well on night one, especially in the pyramid. And their serving kind of just kept us at bay and kept us out of the game. I think we probably had offensively one of the worst nights we've had in a really, really long time, in the pyramid. And I tip my hat to them because I think they had a lot to do with it. The service pressure was really, really good. And, you know, Long Beach is a team that really thrives on errors. And they're a team that their pins don't make a ton of errors, and what they are going to do is put you in really, really tough situations. And in order to play with them, you gotta limit the errors and also find ways to score and make it challenging for them. And I thought on night two, we were able to make some adjustments and put ourselves back in a position to be competitive with them. And, you know, I thought that first set could have gone our way. I think we had a really great shot at winning it, and Long Beach made a couple of really, really nice plays at the end of it. And, you know, both the matches only went three, but night two was incredibly competitive, and just a few points kind of separating us in each and every set. And but we had a couple of guys that played really well. I thought Jalen Phillips was fantastic on night two. He actually almost had a close to errorless night until the very last swing of the match. He made his first error, but he hit almost 600 and played really, really well. The unfortunate thing, Donovan Constable got hurt in set two and left the match and did not return. So we're still waiting on a diagnosis in terms of where he's at and kind of what this week looks like for him. But we had our freshman Owen Doffner come in and he actually played really well, did some really nice things for us and kept us in a spot to be competitive. And you know. But yeah, Long Beach had a really, really nice weekend and played incredibly well. And they're doing a really, really nice job right now. Alan Knipe and Nick and, you know, their staff, those guys are doing a really, really good job.
Yeah. Well, you know who really stuck out this weekend for Long Beach State was Soto Chapanes. Hit over 400 both nights. And then, you know, he had a role play backup outside in case he needed offense. And one of the nights is Nathan Harlan. The other was Skylar Varga. So they're really finding ways to win using multiple personnel, which, I mean, good time of the year to be doing that for sure.
Yeah, and well, you know, I think the thing that's really unique too, Rob, is, you know, Siaponis is defensively really, really fantastic. Obviously, so is Mason Briggs. But their first and second contact is probably the best in the nation right now. And obviously, you got Aiden Knipe who's setting, and he's doing a really nice job. But even when he's not setting, the rest of the group can and can put their hitters in really, really great situations. And so, you know, their out-of-system stuff is really, really fantastic, and they make very few errors. It's really quite impressive.
Yeah. Well, any other coach, I didn't get to do this for Brad, though, but any chiming in on Brad's match or Theo's matches?
I'll chime in on the Long Beach Northridge match. I think Theo nailed it with their first contacts, whether it's serving or receiving. They're showing why they can run their offense at a high clip. I think what's also remarkable is that they run a slower offense. You know, if you look at Long Beach when Tuaniga and DeFalco and them were there, they were running really fast to both pins, and it made your blockers have to make some decisions that maybe went or went against them, depending upon, you know, which side of the coin you're on. But now with Aiden's not an in-system setter, so to speak. And granted, he could run in-system, don't get me wrong, but their offense is slower. And for their hitters to still be that effective when they know they're going to have two guys in front of them, most likely, and a lot of the times three blockers, and still be that successful, I think that's what's starting to showcase their skill sets a little bit more, is that they're just relentless when they have high ball out of system sets. And the last thing for me really is, you know, Long Beach has guys on the bench that can step in at any moment and do some good things. Harlan Cohen is the unsung, and not unsung because there's a lot of people that are talking about him, but man, the kid has been sitting behind Godbold for a while and sitting behind a couple of other guys for a while. That kid is legit good.
You referring to Nathan Harlan?
Yeah, I'm referring to Nathan Harlan. Okay.
Harlan Cohen, old school Pepperdine coach.
Yeah, I was Harlan like, Cohen. It's a great reference right there. Nathan Harlan, the kid is legit good. And, you know, if Godbold gets healthy again, it'll be interesting to see, does Long Beach stay with Nathan Harlan? And I wouldn't be surprised if they give him a shot to maybe take it the rest of the way. But, yeah, Long Beach is just – they're just – solid all around. They don't make a lot of mistakes, and their block is really good. They make your hitters have to make decisions because they're just solid. They don't get wild and crazy with their arms. They just get up in your airspace, and it's tough. So yeah, they're solid for sure.
All right, Dan, anything to add on any of those matches?
Just Harlan's an excellent volleyball player. I coached him USA College Beach a couple years ago, and the guy's just super skilled. So I'm not shocked at all that he's stepping in and doing some things at a pretty high level for them when they need him to. Do you know what I mean? But certainly there's a reason Long Beach is number one right now. Do you know what I mean? So they're doing some really good things. And so yeah. Hey, Rob, are we going to go to your match?
I was about to skip mine, but.
Oh, no. We go to you, buddy. We'll let you talk about it.
All right. Well, first of all, I want to say about the Hawaii at Irvine 4-2. Huge thanks to all the people that came up and said hello and said great comments. I know it's hard to believe they said great things about Jay and Theo and Brad and Dan, but there are a lot of listeners on the Hawaii side for College Volleyball Weekly. And, you know, I think it's the only match that I gain weight from eating chocolate macadamia nuts and have big bags of coffee brought from the island. So appreciate you guys listening. And I love all the input I get from you guys. And, you know, you guys are a great crowd to have in a venue. And so that was enjoyable. So match-wise, night one, Irvine came out, and I think it's the first time that you got to see a true dialed-in Irvine starting lineup with Flexinen and Heno at the outsides, Darcy at the oppo, Sheward, and then, of course, you got Grigoriev and Campbell in the middle and power at libero. And it was a huge offensive night. I mean, set one.
Hold on, Rob. Hold on. Night two against us is when they put that lineup together.
Well, they were dialed in, even more dialed in, this one here.
Oh, I'm sorry. They had two outside hitters that hit almost 500 that night. Yeah, they weren't dialed in yet. Yeah, you're right. Well, no, but please, go ahead. Sorry. Yeah.
Well, that first set, I couldn't believe it on the broadcast. Irvine was hitting over 600, and Hawaii was hitting over 500. And it was just a slugfest to get out of the gate. You know, Irvine ended up winning the night 3-0, and, you know, the chatter was, you know, and it's coming from Hawaiians. We don't know if we're going to make it. You know, this is not the year. I'm like, never count out a Hawaii team is what I've learned when you got Charlie Wade coaching and the tournaments in Hawaii. And with that 3-0 win for Irvine on Friday night, we went into Saturday night, and that's where you got to see the chess match happen. Now, Charlie Brand, my analyst, is like, oh, Charlie's going to tweak this, and they're going to end up winning. You know, they're going to take a couple tonight. You know, obviously, there was an incident that happened on night two. Irvine took the first set 25-22. Irvine was up 22 to like 19 or 18 going into the second. Flexen goes for a ball deep off the end line, and he gets close to the Gucci seats, which are our donor seats, so to speak, goes out, dives, stretch out his right arm, which is the shoulder he injured early in the season against UCLA, and he goes down, and it is silent in the venue. Obviously, you know, everyone's concerned for him, and Nif pulls him out, and they bring in Andon Krioku, a freshman outside, 6'2", different look, but a good passer. Flexen comes back on in the third, so he gives a nod. Trainer says okay to go in, but mentally, you can see that change. Irvine ended up losing that second set 26-24, 27-25, and you can see that the whole the whole momentum had just shifted after that injury. Flexen came back in, first three balls hit out. But they kept going, and then Nip made some changes, took out Sheward. Charlie Brand was saying that, you know, Shuey was getting a little too predictable, so he brought in Carlos, but just they couldn't get it back. Heno was off. He hit his second lowest offensive production at just over 120 for the night after hitting 117 against Theo the previous weekend on one of the nights. So
I want to blame Jay for Hino's bad night, because I think Earlis, last thing we did, Jay's like, said something about that. We had to say, no, he hasn't had very many, and now he goes and has a bad night. Good job, Jay. All hate mail for Hino can go to Jay Hossig.
Well, and let's also comment. First of all, I love Charlie Brand. Let's also comment on Charlie saying, yeah, we're going to take out Chewy because he's getting a little predictable. Hino gets 90% of the sets on any given night. It's predictable. Everyone knows it's going to Hino. When you're on court and you're wondering where it's going to go, look at Hino. It's going there no matter what. Shuey, you're not getting too predictable. You're just doing what you're supposed to do. And Nif was probably just trying something different.
Well, I definitely want to shout out the play of Hawaii on night two. And, you know, I feel like middles get overlooked quite a bit. But if it weren't for Kurt Neustrer and getting those early, like he had back-to-back-to-back blocks at one point and then crushed two balls. And, you know, his numbers don't show up, but the timing of what shifted everything, Neustrer was a key part of what initiated that. And then Guillerme Voss was just Guillerme Voss. You know, he stays calm, cool, collected, does what he needs to do, high hitting percentage. And Tredd Rosenthal, I mean, he really got more offensive minded, doing a lot more of the second ball attacks and throwing Irvine off. And he's what, 6'8", 6'9"? So he's going up super high. Looks like he's going to set. Then he turns it last minute and dumps it down. So, and then Keone Thim, stepping at the OH2 position, huge play by him, you know, not only in serve receive, but defensively. And he even contributed offensively with some really big swings on broken plays, which, you know, was a part of why Hawaii won. They were so scrappy and they got it done in transition, getting those pickups. So split the series, you know, everyone was quiet, Bren, when we left on Saturday night, but it was good volleyball in the end. You know, Irvine, got caught off guard, and Hawaii turned it up. So it was a great response by the Rainbow Warriors. So with that, you guys can respond.
I'll be quick. Maybe I won't be quick. First of all, I want to give some kudos to Hawaii. When you lose your number one producer, and then other people have to start stepping up, it might take a little bit. Not because those players don't know how to play, but because now, rather than relying upon the one guy that can get you out of trouble or the one guy that you know when you're in system is going to get some points for you, now everybody else has to carry a little bit more extra load. And I think when it first happened, I think people in Hawaii were a little nervous, and rightfully so, because you don't know what's going to happen. And I think their first couple matches, you're like, is this going to be that rough of a year without Spyros? And I think the challenge has been met. I think Hawaii now knows they've got some other guys that can carry a little bit more weight. And they showed it against a good UC Irvine team. Secondly, Nursery doesn't get enough respect. Everybody knows Voss because Voss is a, you know, consistent producer, but Nursery did some nice things that night. He's an under the radar middle when you're looking at numbers and you're looking at who the players are supposed to be, but he's a good competitor. I think, first of all, let's also talk about the rad naming. And I said rad because it's a rad name.
You're so 80s, Jay.
Of the Gucci seats at UC Irvine, because we all know the Gucci seats. But I think Irvine is you know, they're I don't want to say they're one-dimensional. They got some other players, but they're one-dimensional. And if you could slow that guy down a little bit, and you could see the frustration on Hilaire Hanno's face when he was getting blocked or he was hitting out or he was getting dug, and he was frustrated because he's normally used to getting just kill after kill after kill. Irvine is going to go into the tournament and say, okay, if he's not having a night, who's going to be the next guy to step up to be able to make that happen? And if Flexen's shoulder is not 100%, I think that could be a little bit of a challenge. I'm not sure that Tengatur is going to be the answer. I'm not sure that, you know, their opposite is going to be the answer. We don't know, but we'll figure that out as we move along. But yeah, Irvine's dangerous there when Hanno is on. Real dangerous.
Yep. Anyone else want to chime in?
My chime in is, like, we're kind of seeing this Lewis, you know, we might call him Louis, but like how he evolves, you know what I mean? Like, you've seen him have a good match or a bad match, but the kid is super athletic and talented for Long Beach, or I mean for Hawaii, you know what I mean? And so, like, he'll be a good kid. And then what? I just read the other day that Hawaii signed two more French kids and a Bulgarian.
Yeah. Yep.
So, well, French, the big connection, West Coast, right? They got a French connection going on, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we talked about it a little bit last week, but the duo of both Flexen and Hanno, and especially when they're healthy, that team is truly special. And there's a balance there. I had a chance to watch this match, and after Flexen went down in the second set, he was noticeably not the same when he returned in set three. And I thought it was interesting. I was going to ask you guys what the rule is on this, but right before Flexen goes down, they serving sub with Tengatur. Now the two subs in that spot are done. Flexen goes down. You're allowed to obviously bring someone back in, but Flexen would be out for the remainder of that set. Can Tengatur come back in, or does it have to be a brand new person?
My understanding is it's in conference play, you can't have. So if you start with Flexen and you sub Tengatur, Flexen has to come back into that third spot. So if they were to sub someone else in, then it would be an injury, and then that player would be out for the rest
of
the
season. Yeah, so Flexen.
Non-conference, you can put three different players in that spot.
I've never heard of that for non-con.
I don't think
that's not true.
Yeah, I don't think
I did it this year.
Well, then your referees blew it.
I tell you this because I was trying to change. I brought this up about changing the rule. Like, currently, it's a one for one. Your one entry is all you get. The only way you do anything outside of that is injury related, and that person cannot. Then that person's done. Do you know what I mean? In terms of that, that's the FIVB rule right now, and that's followed by NCA right now. And so, like, because one of the things I brought up was, like, it'd be nice as a coach. I don't want to change six subs, but, like, if you could have more than one entry in that spot, You know what I mean? Where it's like, hey, I start, Theo comes in for me, whatever happens, you know what I mean? I could bring Brad in that same spot. You know what I mean? And so, like, you still would only have one entry, but you could do more than one spot. And I think I have to get more info from all the head coaches if they're okay with this, you know what I mean, before I do it. But I think it's the rule that would give just a little bit more movement on some certain situations for coaches.
I'm all for that. And I've been preaching that for since day one, that we should stay at the six, but just not have two per spot. Just make it unlimited.
Yeah, the problem with the unlimited is that, and this is the flip side, because I'm not disagreeing with you, Theo, because I kind of lean towards it. But the flip side is that you just have serving subs. This guy comes in three times, so the guy at Hawaii would obliterate you three times.
Yeah.
So, absolutely.
But you can go serving subs, but now you can't do a front row option, right? Versus a back row option.
Right.
So you'd have to pick one or the other if you stay at six. And I think that's where the balance is, right?
Maybe. Yeah. I think the other way we move it just at least gives you can do more than one thing in that spot at least.
For sure. The thing that I didn't understand though, Tangatora goes in, he goes on a serving run. I think they're up 19-17 when Flexton comes back in and then gets injured. I didn't understand why Niffen didn't go right back to Tangatora, who had just had a ton of success, and allow him to finish set two. I was assuming that it must be a rule that, hey, because it was an injury, that spot technically was done. I don't know if Tangator could not re-enter and they had to go to the Canadian guy. I was waiting to ask the podcast just to see what the ruling was, at least what you guys understood of the rule at that point.
Well, I was courtside and Niff was speaking to the R2, Chris Hahn, for a lengthy amount of time before they brought that discussion in. So I had a feeling they were discussing that. Can only hear so much, but you know, he ended up putting an end on Kirioku, who hadn't seen, he only seen very little time.
Yeah. That's what was so surprising to me. And they had a 2-point or a 1-point lead at the point when they made that sub. And so I thought it was interesting to go with the guy who has had very little experience to date. But again, back to the Irvine piece, I think with those two outsides healthy, they're really special. And there's a balance there. You know, Darcy has had some inconsistencies in the back row. And I think that, you know, Eno comes back in set three, makes a few hitting errors and has trouble finding his rhythm. And that's where you start to see Brad Stewart looking predictable. Is Darcy, he didn't want to set Darcy in the back row. He was losing the confidence with Eno. Eno was having, with Flexton, because he was having trouble contacting the ball. And then it just becomes the Hillier Eno show, and Hawaii was able to key on it. So really, really interesting match from an injury perspective, and just goes to show you, I mean, even with some really great teams, injuries can change a lot.
Yep. Brad, any last thoughts?
No, just tail it to Henos, right? Like, if Henos not going to be great, it's going to be tough for Irvine to win. You know, and that's good for Irvine because he's generally pretty great most of the time. And I think Hawaii, I thought their block overall was pretty good and definitely affected the match. And help their defense out and help them kind of earn some more points over time, because they haven't been as clean or as effective as they're traditionally used to being.
Yeah. Well, I was going to go to Dan, but being that the Miva is already finished, we're going to save him for last, because we're going to go into tournament outlooks here. So let's go to Jay and the EIVA, which Jay could be playing for an EIVA title, but let's let him talk about his week instead before that.
Well, we'll talk about the stuff going on around. Charleston lost both matches to Penn State, which keeps Penn State undefeated in conference. And NJIT faltered against Princeton, which we were hoping for. Princeton's at four losses. And now Princeton has got two matches against Charleston next week, which could have big implications. We are sitting at two losses and had our alumni weekend and our senior night this weekend. It was a lot of emotion going on. We have rolled into the weekend undefeated at home, and on Friday night took care of business against Harvard. And then Saturday was a really, really full slate of stuff. You know, obviously we have senior night with all the families and the fans coming in and watching the match. We had alumni weekend, so all the alumni came in and we dedicated our locker room in the name of Coach Wayne Stalick, which was really great. And we had a locker dedication on the inside for one of our longtime boosters and donors. So just a lot of emotion, a lot of great things happening. But we took care of business again in three straight, and that's good for us because now we're rolling into next weekend against Penn State. We have two losses. Penn State has zero. If we win both matches, we host the EIBA. If we split, we will solidify second place, and that's a good spot to be in as well. You get a bye in the first round, and you don't see the number one seed till the end. If we lose both and Princeton wins both, then we will go into third place, which is still not an awful place to be, but it's not the worst, because what you really want to do is you don't want to be number four or number five. So this weekend for us is big. And, you know, I know everybody recognizes that the Penn State's good and the whole nine yards, but, you know, they're not the three-headed beast they had the last few years. So we feel that there's some opportunity for us, and we're riding high right now. We had 11 straight wins, undefeated at home, and did some nice things. And we're getting better and better at the right time of the year. So this weekend's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be some really good matches, two teams that are, you know, fighting for the right to host. I think it's been a while since Penn State has not clinched hosting the IBAs until the last weekend in a long time. And we hope to keep it that way. But, you know, you never know where the chips are going to fall. We're hoping for some things around conference to help out a little bit, but we like our chances and we like what we're doing. And, you know, we're going to roll into the weekend and see what we can do.
Well, Jay, I definitely thought you would have mentioned your National Player of the Week and Jack Bowles.
Well, listen, I can mention all my team. My whole team is doing some nice things. Jack Bowles is, you know, starting to find a way to score points at random places and with different parts of his game. And, you know, he and Omar now keep the court 30 feet wide, which is good. And, you know, when you got some middles that can put some balls down, now all of a sudden we've got some options. And, you know, we haven't had that in the last couple of years with a consistent run. So, you know, we're just plugging along, you know, we're just little old George Mason trying to find a way. And, you know, along the way, we're figuring some things out and making some changes, and things are going our way right now, but it's a big weekend coming up. We're not counting any chickens before they hatch.
Yep. And right before your Saturday night match, you develop a NCAA men's volleyball bracket, but that's for another topic for another time in our segment.
Yep. Yep. I was like a mad hatter trying to put this thing together, and, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about it later on, but it's pretty cool to look at when you finally see it all laid out and you're seeing all the brackets whittle down. It's really, really cool. So I'm excited to talk about that.
It is
all right,
darn
let's
impressive.
Go. Other coaches in on the EIVA and the mighty Jay Hossix.
Princeton's got to beat Charleston twice though, too, right, Jay? Like in terms of that stuff. And so I think you've seen Charleston. I don't know, they're playing a little bit better. So that's not a, is that at Princeton or is that is at?
It's at Princeton.
Well, I think the secret thing for all you coaches out there is to take a 2-week reprieve where you don't play and all you do is golf. And then your team goes on an 11-0 run after this and you're sitting in a pretty good suite. I just did it wrong, guys. I got to figure this out. You know what I mean? Who knows to Jay? I think Mason's playing well, and he's got a couple pieces, and Omar's doing a really nice job. And so, like, but I think you saw Penn State with Kerr. You know, Kerr had a couple nice matches back to back, and so I think this will be a good one to put on people's radar if you're not watching. It'll be pretty fun.
Yep.
Yeah, I think the impressive piece is you know, not just that George Mason wins, but the fashion in which they did it in. That Harvard team is good. And a lot better than the scores would show. But it just goes to show you how well they're grooving right now. And Omar Hoyos, I don't do this very often, but that's my player of the week, so no one else take it. I mean, the guy had 565 on 15 kills the first night, 13 kills the next night, 20 points. I mean, he's doing it all. He's doing it from service line. He's doing it offensively. I mean, he's at the ripe age of 28 years old. He is truly a force to be reckoned with, and it's impressive.
Hey, I'm calling this player of the year for the EVA.
Ooh, that's a nice one. First of all, he's not 28.
Absolutely would second that, Dan.
He's not 28. I think he's only 22. So he had 7 aces to 3 errors on Saturday night. And a few of those were above 70 plus. So, yeah, he's finding a few rhythm.
Marv Dunphy used to say, if you have two errors to one ace, you're doing okay. So I would say he's doing a little better than okay.
Brad, do you have anything to add on there?
No, just Omar Sherman was what I was going to talk about. Eight aces on the weekend and just really, really impressive. He's hitting it, you know, with a ton of pace, 70 plus or so, and 20% air right around there. So that's a pretty good ratio for someone smacking it like that.
That battle for the EIVA Player of the Year could be tough because John Kerr in this weekend, like, he just looked at the numbers like, wow, he was double-digit kills, hitting well over 300, 400. And he's been doing that pretty consistently since, I mean, coming out of the First Point Challenge. And that was in mid-January. So that'll be
interesting. The weekend will tell you, I guess, huh? Yeah.
So big match at it. That's going to be at Happy Valley, right? Both of them?
Yep, both at Happy Valley. And you know, by the graciousness of all these scheduling gods, they put us there on a weekend when it's their annual blue-white football game. So we can't even get a hotel within an hour distance of the place. So, yeah, great scheduling, EIVA schedulers. You put us there this year at that point. Last year, you put us in Boston during the Boston Marathon. All the costs and price are up. I don't understand why we can't figure that out, but apparently we can't figure that out.
Well, just throw an easy up in front of Pav's house. You'll be good.
We gotta go to Ohio State, and it's their spring football thing, and we haven't found a hotel yet, and the game's on Saturday. So
good luck.
Let's go over to the MEVA action. But first, Dan's gotta talk about his Lewis Flyers and the week they had. And because they're the lone conference to start playoff action this week, we're gonna let him go into that as well. So Dan, fire away.
Well, we weren't as good as we needed to be. How about that? You know what I mean? So like, no sugarcoating there. So Purdue played well. Frazier had a good night. We lost. We almost had a reverse sweep. We were down 0-2 and ended up losing 16-14. But kudos to Purdue's tough at their house for sure. So they've been playing some good volleyball at their place. And between Frazier and Dietrich, those guys certainly carry some weight. They've got Dietrich on the opposite. So like Jay talks about, it stretches you out on 30 feet when you're trying to do some of that stuff. Two guys playing well. And then I think Loyola is just really good. Parker Van Buren had 21 kills. Like, he'll probably be in that candidate for Player of the Year up there with the MEVA. And Dan Magnum just runs a really good offense, and so I think they played well. And that was their senior night. And I think always you get ramped up on a senior night. So I think if you're an opposing team walking into somebody's senior night, you got to be pretty dialed in. And so, and I'm not sure we were where we need to be. And for us, we're sitting. We tied for fifth, but because of tiebreaker stuff, we're in the sixth spot. So we go to Ohio State. You saw McKinry up 2-0 twice and get reverse swept both times. So you know our kids are playing. This is with a new setter, remember, that's in there, and they're setting that for them, Nathan Flattery. Ultimately, you know, they put themselves in that tie with us, and Purdue by beating us, and Quincy ends up in that tie. And then Lindenwood goes to Queens and, you know, kind of takes care of business. So it slides them into that fourth slot from that standpoint. Ball State clinched league on their own, third time in a row. So all hell Donan right now. Do you know what I mean? Donan's gone in and won three times in a row. Do you know what I mean? So he's doing some good things. And they still don't have Patrick Rogers right now. So he's not in the lineup yet. I think this first round will be interesting. A couple of days off for some teams, get healthy, full slate of games on Saturday. You got Ball State versus Queens going there, McKinry at Loyola. We all know what happened last year. And so like, but I'm sure Loyola knows that, and they're going to be pretty fired up and ready to go. And so, but you got that match. We go out to Ohio State if we can find somewhere to stay. And then Purdue Fort Wayne goes to Lindenwood. And Lindenwood blanked them last time, I think 3-0, Purdue Fort Wayne. And so I think should be an interesting first round while everybody else is finishing up their regular season. So
are we going to talk about the first round on a different segment, Rob, or should we talk about it right now?
Well, we definitely touch on Conference Carolina SIAC, and they say MPSF. Well, yes.
One thing on Jay's or on Dan's match, I think Lewis wins the award for coolest jerseys of the year. Those alternate jerseys, the Ray Strong jerseys. I don't know if you wore them earlier on in the year, but that was my first time seeing them. And I was like, those are awesome. Those are sweet. I was a big fan.
Thanks.
Was that also why the line?
Did you get to see my jacket?
No, I didn't see the jacket.
How did you miss the jacket? There, you can't miss that jacket.
The glasses, Theo. Come on.
That jacket was absolutely incredible. And is that why the lines were purple too?
Yeah, so we're really thankful to Loyal and their staff. So their men's basketball coach, Drew Valentine, and his wife, they had a preemie that was born around 27, 28 weeks. So they took $2 from every ticket sold and donated it back to the Ray Strong Foundation. And they help with Maud Volleyball, who's kind of coordinating with their club. And so kudos to Hawks and Steve Watson and their administration on hosting that for us. And certainly, if you guys didn't know, Ray was born at Loyola Hospital downtown, so there's a connection via that. It was really nice of them on their senior night to find a way to kind of do the Ray Strong stuff. So, and we took a little photo, and my wife and Ray were there at the same time, so that was cool.
Let this be known. There is a strong, strong history of no love lost between Lewis and Loyola over the decades. And since the new regime at Loyola, I'm sure there is still a heated rivalry, but it's healthy. And this just goes to prove that the power of sport and the power of the connection of all the men's programs out there to do this in somebody else's house shows the level of respect that we all have for each other. And, you know, sports aside, rivalry aside, the fact that Loyola bent over to do that and help out in Hawks and their basketball coach, that's pretty cool. So kudos to those guys for stepping up and showing what they could do.
Yep.
I pulled up the image of the jacket. And the jacket is very Kim Mulkey-esque. The South Carolina and winning the national championship. Hawks had the Don Staley cool look, and then you went straight Kim Mulkey with it.
Well, with that, we can't avoid the other conferences. I'm going to touch on Conference Carolinas. They only have one more match remaining this week. They're all sitting at 13 matches played. So Belmont Abbey, even if they lose this week, they're going to win out in the conference. North Greenville in second, 10-3. Erskine third and 9-4, Mount Olive. And Barton rounding out the rest of that. And they are in their conference tournament already, just going to get the seeding in the final four spots there. So that will be happening. We'll know this week, I believe, once you get the results. Anything to add on Conference Carolinas, guys?
Well, I got to give it a little shout out to Derek, head coach at Belmont Abbey. He is married to the niece of one of our great family friends, Heather Gearhart, who is the head coach down at Winthrop. And that's pretty, pretty cool for him. He's taking that program to new heights, doing some really, really good things. And, you know, volleyball runs in a family. It's pretty cool. So kudos to Derek. You know, now they got to get it done. This is where the real rubber meets the road.
Yep.
I think it's interesting. Erskine is putting together some nice volleyball late. And, you know, this week they had two big wins, 3-0 over Barton and then 3-0 over Mount Olive. And that Mount Olive team is good. So I think it'll be interesting. This conference tournament, I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yep. Yeah, I was thinking, you know, one of the teams that was in the NCAA tournament last year was King with Warren Davis, and not in the conference tournaments. He was kind of hoping to get a second ring, but a second look at him, because in Fairfax last year, Warren Davis was so fun to watch play. And sitting with Jay courtside calling that match, I'm like, man, this kid is good. Well, the list him at 6'2", but man, that's a generous 6'2".
With shoes on. At least they list him at 6'2", and he actually is 6'2". You know, a lot of us on this screen, we get recruit letters from kids. I'm 6'7", I'm an outside hitter, and the kid comes on his visit, and he's 6'3".
He expands with heat, that's why. Let's go over to the SIAC here. Fort Valley State, undefeated. That's Larry Rather's Fort Valley State team, and Edward Waters, 8-1. Central State, Kentucky State, Benedict and Morehouse round out the rest of the SIAC. And I believe, is it being hosted at Fort Valley State again this year? Is that right? I couldn't find the info on it. Thought I sent it someone's way here, but it didn't stick. So, but with that, it's looking like Fort Valley State will get the number one seed in, and they're going to get their first auto berth into the NCAA tournament from this, their conference tournament. So I'd be looking forward to catching that. But that brings us to the MPSF, which there's an important pair of matches that I believe a lot of people are watching. I'll admit I had it on while I was working my matches because everyone wanted to know what was going to happen between number 3 GCU and number 2 UCLA. So I'm going to let the East Coast guys talk because I think they got to watch it a little more closely than, let's say, us West Coast guys, being that we were all in matches, at least on one of the nights.
Well, I thought it was pretty cool that UCLA put that out for everybody to see without it being on Pac-12 Network. So kudos to UCLA for doing that. I'll be real honest with you. I was underwhelmed with Grand Canyon on the first night. I didn't think that they came out with the same type of fire and energy that they've had all year. And granted, that doesn't mean that UCLA didn't play well. They played extremely well. And they have found a groove, so to speak, and they are dangerous. Night two, however, a little different story. Grand Canyon down 2-1, came back. They go into the fifth game, and the score wasn't that tight in the fifth, but Grand Canyon is still not a team I want to face. And I think if I'm a gambling man, I'm going to say it's going to be Grand Canyon and UCLA in the finals of the MPSF. I just think that's the way it's going to go. So, if you're looking around, obviously BYU, Stanford, those are teams that are in the hunt still, and there's no surefire way to say that's going to be just UCLA and Grand Canyon. But if I was a gambling man, I might match the pot with Grand Canyon and UCLA in that final.
Yeah. Dan, do you have something to add in there? I saw you about to.
No, I was just like, I think it'll be interesting. Those two get to the final. UCLA, if they lose, they're going to probably be in a better contention for the at-large, where GCU's maybe not in the same space. But I say that, and I don't know that for – I mean, there's a lot of numbers you got to look at and all the stuff that goes along with that. But UCLA's got the head-to-head initially with the two wins, which I think is huge, given me from that standpoint. And so I think when you get to that at-large contingent, you got those two spots, it'll be an interesting conversation as that kind of goes. But – I thought the split for USC and BYU, though, that was the other thing. I thought that was – I thought BYU was in some space where they were doing really nice things. And we know USC is very capable. They got some super talented guys between Klein and, their middle and some other guys. And so I'm not surprised that they came out of split on that in terms of that. And so – but the Pepperdine Masters thing, like, I know Masters is good. But I always wonder that stuff, like those are danger matches. Like, and as a head coach, I mean, ultimately Theo lost a tough one, the Masters too. And Masters is good and they're super talented and they may win the NAIA thing, but it's funny because like, you want to help those programs and a guy who came from NAIA, you want to play that match. But I mean, they have everything to gain and you have everything to lose. Do you know what I mean? In terms of where that match space is at. And so it's like an interesting mentality. Do I schedule it? Do I not schedule it? I'd like to get the match. And so, like, I don't know. Interesting topic that we don't have to jump into, but and kudos to Masters. Good win for those guys. So,
well, I will jump in as a former D3 coach. When I first started, I'm on the West Coast back in the day in Santa Cruz, and I'm looking for matches. And luckily back then it was a little bit of a different situation. NAIA wasn't quite as strong. Division III still helped with your points or whatever in the rankings. And it gave you a little bit of, legitimacy, so to speak. And back then I was screaming for it. Now as a Division I head coach, my administration luckily took the decision out of my hands. They won't let me play a D3 or an NAIA school during the year, during the season, at least. We can play them in the fall. But the reason is exactly what you said, Dan. It does nothing for your program. And it doesn't mean that those teams aren't good. Listen, Masters, they have 8 scholarships, and they've got a lot of kids that can play at a really high level. And if all of us had 8 scholarships, it might be a little bit different story because we'd be taking some of those kids into our programs. But if you win, everybody says, well, you're supposed to. And if you lose, everybody goes, wait, what's going on? And then all of a sudden, it just gets muddied. So, I give Pepperdine credit and Theo credit for scheduling those teams. It shows that they have the confidence in their programs to handle business. But at the same time, does it help or hurt? And I don't know what the answer is. I'm not sure that I would be so apt to be so gracious with those scheduling choices.
Yeah. Gentlemen, anything else to add on MPSF matches?
Yeah. I mean, I'll comment on the UCLA GCU. I think that one of the strengths to Grand Canyon for a really, really long time has been ball control and their ability to stay in system and let Nick Slight do what he does, you know, offensively. And I, you know, just in watching these matches, it was not the case. And the big reason why UCLA won, you know, I was looking at the numbers and I think on the scale of three, Grand Canyon passed a 188 for both matches combined. And so they were incredibly out of system and, you know, and on the run constantly. And it's a, you know, obviously tip my hat to UCLA because they forced that on them. But I think it's going to be interesting to see can Grand Canyon kind of find that groove again. You know, they don't have your prototypical 6'10" sticks on the pins, and you know they're not the type of team that's just going to beat you out of system with a high ball and just overwhelm you with it. They really thrive on the speed of their offense and the trickery of allowing Nick Slight to do what he does, and so their ability to kind of get back in system and get things going again is going to be really important.
That's a very insightful description. Grand Canyon does rely on being in system. If their first contact, whether it's off serve receive or off the block or maybe a roll shot dig that gets put in a perfect spot, then Grand Canyon's dangerous. But if they're out of system a lot, they struggle a little bit with swinging at those high balls. That's a great analogy.
So the interesting thing to me with the Grand Canyon UCLA is it looks like UCLA has kind of found their lineup they start with Cooper Robinson and Champlin. And really, Champlin didn't play great, passed the heck out of the ball and was really good in serve receive and good from the end line. But offensively was very average, which for him is not normal. But then Grand Canyon, after night one, seemed to make a conscious decision of like, hey, we need more offense on the court and we need less passing. We need less serve receive. And they moved Camden Gianni to the left and brought in Jared Anderson, graduate transfer from Springfield College, Division III powerhouse with Charlie Sullivan and company. I think he was D3 player of the year once or twice. And I'd imagine won one, if not more, national championships while he was out there. And they made that switch to the lineup. Which I think helped them offensively there. Might have hurt them a little from the end line. Carter Rogers, their outside hitter who was playing before Gianni switched over to that spot, has got a pretty good serve too. And I didn't notice Jared Anderson doing too much from the end line. But I thought offensively that really rounded them out and that really kind of kept them in some of these longer rallies with some really good out-of-system swings and made them a little bit more of an out-of-system team as opposed to the in-system team like Theo referenced there earlier. But you know, ultimately it was interesting to see out of all these great servers, it was all the servers that were a little unorthodox that ended up making the difference, whether it was Nick Slight with his reverse hybrid, Cameron Thorne with his float serve scored some points. Sean McQuiggan had a really good run, UCLA middle, really good run to give him some advantage. I think it was in set three to pull him away. And then the fifth set came down to Merrick McHenry's serve, and that was ultimately what was the difference maker. So some interesting tactics for Grand Canyon. And we actually saw Matt Worley and in the fall, they pulled out that lineup. And it was like, whoa, that could be pretty scary if it gets rolling. I haven't watched every match they've played this year, but I think this was the first time that they rolled with it from the start. So definitely interesting to see what they're going to do going into the next weekend where I think they're hosting Pepperdine. So what do? They go back to what they had been doing? Do they stick with this lineup? And do they think that can help them win the MPSF tournament?
Well, Grand Canyon will need the help of CUI if they want to have a shot at that MPSF tournament, or number one seed in the regular season title. UCLA heads down, or actually it's a home and home. So, but that those home matches will be helpful for Grand Canyon hosting Pepperdine twice, especially after this last week that Pepperdine had against the Masters. But it's funny, you're saying about Ethan Champlin. He's always been, I don't know if you guys know this figure, Pulp Fiction, one of my favorite characters in there, was the wolf. I feel like Ethan Champlin is the wolf. He just kind of goes in, takes care of business, does what needs to be done, and makes sure everything is clean. So it's been fun watching.
It's a great reference, by the way, Pulp Fiction, you know, the UC Santa Cruz volleyball reference in there with a UCSC shirt on there. Just saying, great reference.
Well, I'm waiting for the Jay Hossack connection, you know, the George Mason version of that shirt. So, do you have something to say?
Just interesting stat. Cooper Robinson for the weekend points scored on his serve at 50% and only missed 8% of them. Pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive.
I wanted to add also, now that we've gone through, are there any other matches you want to touch on here for in week 14 or 15? What did I say? 14.
I mean, another one was USC 5-7
over BYU.
BYU. Yeah. Noah Roberts came in and changed the match there. I didn't see if he started, but when I put it on, he was in there. And BYU was struggling to stop him and slow him down. And there was a point, Caleb Blanchett, the setter for USC, dumps the ball out of bounds, and BYU thinks they win the match, and BYU, one of the blockers, netted on the way down, and it extends the match out, and then USC ends up winning 4 or 5 points later. So it was a great battle, and both those teams were, I wasn't watching too closely, but both those teams were taking some really nice big time swings and playing some good defense.
Yeah, Roberts had 19 kills at 593. It looks like he came in the second set and played the rest of the way through. So a big roll off the bench there for Noah Roberts. anything else before I jump into at least one of the topics I want to hit on? And no, wanted to say I forgot to add into the Big West report, being that now we've covered all the teams with all the faces on the screen too. But Long Beach State officially claims a 2024 regular season title, and this is a stat that blew me away. They won the MPSF title in 2017. We're Big West champions 2018 and 19, 20, COVID, we all forget about that year. 2021, they were third. And I know they're injury riddled that year, but then have been since 22, 23, and now 24 Big West Conference champions. So impressive for Long Beach State.
Shows what you could do when you have a 98-man roster.
And the other big piece of news, Jay Hossack's creative ability to make the NCAA or the conference tournament bracket. People are running with it, and we'll see how we're going to distribute it. But, you know, Jay, great work.
Well, listen, I had some free time in between all the stuff going on this weekend. And you know, when inspiration hits, you got to tap into it. So I spent a couple hours. I put together the brackets and I sent it off to you guys and said, hey, here's my first iteration. What do you guys think? And you guys all responded pretty quickly. And so I finished it up as best I could. The challenge, obviously, is, you know, we don't know who's where yet. So obviously we can't fill it out, with the exception of the MEVA, which is all filled out on that bracket. But I noticed that somebody on Volley Talk has also put together at least a starting bracket with the MEVA. I know, Rob, you were talking about being able to find a bracket online that you can use. You know, let's run with this. Whoever wants to take the reins and run with it, I'm going to give mine to Rob, and if he could somehow get it to be postable on Volley Talk, great. I know I'm going to share mine with some of my friends around the country, but let's get this thing going. If we can get this thing on Volley Talk and get some people rolling with it and have people start to fill out brackets and send them in, how cool would that be? That would be a lot of fun. So, yeah, stoked that people are fired up on it, and can't wait to see it, how it all unfolds.
And Jay, I'm surprised you didn't mention this, but I thought it was really cool that you offered to give, if anyone gets the a perfect bracket through all the conference tournament, you offered to give them $5. I think that was a really, really generous offer.
I won't give you the $5, but I'll give you a free Mason t-shirt, free Mason men's volleyball t-shirt. If anybody puts together a perfect bracket and can prove that they did it from beginning to end, I will give them a free Mason volleyball t-shirt.
That Volkswagen van t-shirt, that George Mason t-shirt?
Oh, don't mess with my Volkswagen van shirt. That's one of my favorites.
Well, how about this? We're all going to be watching all the remaining matches this week, especially the MEVA with the playoffs starting. But what other matches should we keep an eye on this last week of, I guess, regular season play for the other conferences?
Well, Mason and Penn State, we already talked about. That was pretty big. You know what I mean? So, implications. So
The Black Irvine and Blue series.
Irvine and Long Beach, right? That's the big one.
That's the Black and Blue
series. That's the big one for sure.
Yeah.
Well, we'll talk about all the rest of them when we get to our upcoming match of the week to watch.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and go into that now, because then we'll do our player of the week. Because let's go with Brad. What you watching?
I mean, there's a lot going on this week, and I mean the Big West. We got Santa Barbara, Northridge. That'll be always a battle for them going back and forth. I'm really intrigued out in the MEVA. I'm intrigued by the Lewis, Ohio State. I can see Lewis putting some things together and figuring it out there. And then Charleston, Princeton. I wouldn't be shocked if Charleston finds a way to sneak one out of that. They're playing tough. I believe they took a set, if not two sets, off Penn State, and they're finding a way. And hopefully they're getting healthier. I haven't watched them play or looked at their numbers, so I don't know for sure. But hoping Luke and the Golden Eagles are getting a little healthier to make it interesting the last few weeks in the EVA.
Yep. Well, anything else? Keep it out there. If you can think of any others. Nope.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I was just going to say next Monday, I'm either going to be like in an, I might not be here.
You know what? Activate the link while you're
in. Either way, you might not be here. Either direction.
I don't know. Where I'm at. You know what I mean? So they called you guys from somewhere else. I'll jump on. No video. You'll just hear my voice. You know, something like that.
As long as your drink has a little tiny umbrella in it, that's all that matters.
Escape and get away for a couple of days.
So. I think a couple of the matches that we haven't mentioned yet is Pepperdine and Grand Canyon, I think, is going to be interesting. And specifically just seeing kind of where Grand Canyon bounces back. And then obviously, you know, Pepperdine lost that match to Masters, who has three guys who are no longer NCAA eligible. I mean, they're really talented. But yeah, I think that's an interesting matchup, and I think it's going to be a battle nonetheless. And then obviously that Irvine and Long Beach match, I think, is going to be really, really interesting. Long Beach has secured the top spot, but I think this is kind of Irvine's opportunity to potentially take the second seat, and seeing where that finishes out. I think it's going to be an absolute battle. And is Nolan Flexton back to health, right? Is he himself? I think that's all. We're all going to learn a couple of lessons this weekend. The other one I think is interesting is USC and Stanford. That matchup is definitely one of two teams that I think are playing pretty well. We didn't mention, you know, Stanford had two pretty good wins. Pretty solid wins over Concordia, and really the thing I thought was interesting was, and I don't know how long it's been this way, but both Lamp and Rotman in the lineup, right? They're kind of more of that senior heavy and back to a lineup that they really was more of a focal point for them in previous seasons. So it'd be interesting to see how that plays out.
That one's going to be chippy too. So if you like a little bit of chippiness, I can see that one maybe having a yellow card.
So we know that UCLA is in the driver's seat for the MPSF, and Grand Canyon right now is in the driver's seat of second place. However, what separates them match-wise for 3-4?
Well, Pepperdine would have to win the two to be, go to 7-5. And BYU's done with their season. The regular season, they already have their 12 matches on the season.
I think BYU has a tiebreaker over Pepperdine, if I remember correctly from a few weeks.
But Grand Canyon only has two losses. So if BYU or Stanford or whoever is in number three with five losses, they can only be number two then, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so I think 1, 2, and 3 are locked in.
All right, so that makes a big difference, because in the MPSF, they like to do things in a strange way and reseed after the first round, which, okay, it's what it is. It's not my choice. But I'll tell you right now, the finals of the MPSF are in USC's house at Galen. And if USC is not in the finals and it's Grand Canyon against UCLA, every USC fan in the country is going to be rooting for Grand Canyon that day. It's going to be like a home match for them. I'm going to talk about my matches, because I'm afraid we're going to get lost here with time. Obviously, I'm watching to see what Charleston Princeton does. If Charleston can sneak one out, that helps our cause. Obviously, the Black and Blue. Here's the thing. In the MEVA, Lewis and Ohio State, Lewis lost both times in three straight. but they weren't blowouts. I'm not sure that Ohio State is the favorite here 100%. I'm not saying that, you know, Lewis is light years better, and it's, but I'm saying don't be surprised, because everybody is beating everybody in that conference at some point. But here's the other thing. The McKendree Loyola and Lindenwood PFW, both matches for both teams, 3-0 wins. Everyone the rest of the way has won 3-0 at somebody's place. Ball State's going to beat Queens. I don't think that's even a topic of conversation. But the next two, McKendree Loyola, Lindenwood PFW, those are matches I'm going to be watching with bated breath. And this just in, I heard Dan is renting RVs for his team, so when they go to Ohio State, they could sleep in the RV right outside in the parking lot.
Sleeper buses, baby. Sleeper buses. That's what we got. So,
go ahead.
Well, since most of the matches have been picked, I'm going to do – so Brad plays Hawaii. And I like to think all of us on the screen have been a giant killer at least once, and Brad's already done it once. So, like, you know what? Brad's going to go out and get one of these wins against Hawaii. It'll be the match to watch. So are you at home or away?
Home.
Oh, yeah. He's going to get one of these. No pressure now, Brad.
Yeah,
no pressure.
Brad. Oh, yeah.
Is Hawaii traveling back home and then going to San Diego? Or are they?
Yes, they are. I asked Mike, why don't you guys stay for the week?
This could be interesting. Tritons.
Well, so with that, always our players of the week. Theo, let's start with you. I don't think we've started with you yet.
Yes. Here we go. All right. Well, you guys already know I have Omar, right? Omar Hoyas.
He's going to take more than one now. So
I'm going to take two. I'll leave the rest out. Omar Hoyas, fantastic. I mean, I talked about him earlier in the segment, but he's playing some really great volleyball. And as a senior, you know, coming down the stretch, it's always nice to see a guy on their way out really going out with a bang. And I think that this is obviously not the end for him. I think George Mason makes a hell of a run in playoffs. And who knows, we might even see him go to the dance. So it's I think that's a really, really cool moment for him. He's my player of the week. And then the other one is Parker Van Buren, who, you know, we've talked about him, I don't know, at least every other week this year. And, 21 kills, 475 against Lewis. And, you know, I had an opportunity to watch that match, and he was just unstoppable. I mean, he absolutely was just putting the ball away left and right. And he is definitely in the conversation for player of the year. You know, we've talked about the Hilaire Henos and the Andrew Rowans of the country, and Parker Van Buren's right there with those guys and playing really, really great.
Yep. Go ahead, Dan.
Well, he took one of mine, but that's okay. I'm going to take Mark Frazier too. So, like, he was pretty key in the win against us, as well as he hit 500 the next match as well. So certainly he was on top of it. And then the other one that I wanted to take was Will Rotman. So I thought, help them get two solid wins and certainly turning up the notch at the end of the season for sure. So,
yep. Over to Jay.
No, I'm going to let Brad go first.
Oh, look at that.
Wow. I feel honored. I'll only take one now because of that. I'm
Brandon Hicks of Masters University.
No, I'm going Merrick McHenry. He hit over 500 night two, hit over 800 night one on a very few swings, but and then really winning or potentially winning the MPSF regular season championship with his serve in that fifth set to be outright, I thought was really impressive. So Merrick McHenry.
Yep. Jake.
I'm going to go with this past weekend, and I'm going to throw forward 6 days to next Saturday as well. I'm going with every senior in the country that is playing in their last home match for the regular season. These are all the COVID kids. These are all the kids that came in when all the craziness happened. They had to deal with all the regulations and playing with the masks on and dealing with no seats. People can't sit in their gyms. All the crazy stuff that everybody had to do was stand 6 feet away from me. All the nuttiness. You're finally moving on to the bigger and better things in life, and all of you are playing great volleyball right now. Hats off to all you seniors out there. You deserve it. You worked your butts off.
For you seniors, much respect to you, but I'm not going to design that graphic.
Just put a mask. Just put a mask and put COVID kids.
Class of 2024 with a mask. There you go.
I knew we'd get so emotional.
Oh, God. We all remember those nightmarish days. It was absolutely hellacious. So thank God it's all over. And those kids, the fact that they're still playing in college and they're still enjoying their process and doing all the fun stuff, hats off to all of them for fighting through all that crazy stuff.
Yep. For those listening to this and not actually seeing the video, the look on Rob's face as he's mentioning the concept of creating a graphic with every single senior, Rob's face was absolutely priceless. That was fantastic.
Get to work, Jay, Rob. To the team, so like, I can do that. That's doable. But now we're looking at the entire nation.
Get to work, Rob. You get cracking, man. You
got GPT, baby.
I've got to add one, and I have to go against my own personal criteria in picking, because usually I look at good statistical numbers from a winning team that had a standout performance. But this week, I'm going to have to go against that and do an honorary. Nick Eichenberger of Emmanuel University. And the reason why is not – his team, Emmanuel, lost in five to Barton. He's a Libro, got 27 digs, which is a phenomenal stat line. But it's what he did before the matches that I want to draw attention to. That was a suicide awareness match. And if you didn't see the video on my feed or on the NCAA MVB feed or Volleyball Mag, he saw his brother, younger brother, Labor Day weekend of last year, and received that dreadful call the first week of October that his brother had taken his life. Basically, they agreed to have this match be a suicide awareness match. And he'd reached out to me to, you know, see if I can help promote it. And the outpouring and the engagement and response I received was mind-blowing. Good and bad, because people were finally coming out to admit that, you know, they're some of the things they're struggling with, and, you know, feeling alone and helpless in their situation. They were thankful that he did that video explaining what he went through, what his brother went through, and just encouraging people to get help. I mean, it was off the charts from, you know, because I track, you know, the engagement on all the accounts, and it just seeing the responses from guys like, Spiros Hakas went on and said something. Anne-Marie Anderson, Kyle Friend, all these people were just showing support for the program. So hats off to Nick Eichenberger. I mean, he had a great statistical match and unfortunately was a loss. But I think what we don't see is if even one life is saved from what you did in this last week and a half, 2 weeks, you know, thank you, Nick. And, you know, one of the things that I've learned from what he's been saying is you are never alone. And for all of you guys, check in on your people. You never know what's going on. Just do the thing, that the right thing, which is just check in on your people. And I know that these coaches, because I know them personally as well, are the kind of people who are compassionate. They will work with you. Your coaching staff, your teammates, go to them. Don't ever think that this permanent solution is the way. You can always find something. And if you are in need of talking, I will throw some resources up. I'm going to continue the dialogue with Nick and see what he got out there, because I know he had to prepare for a match. Like, can you get some so I can at least promote it? You know, because they did some kind of awareness piece before the streaming of that match, which I didn't get to watch. So, and I don't think it's archived anywhere, but I'm hoping that I can get some information for all of you out there. So, but had to end on that note, because Nick was, has been awesome. So, but I cannot thank you guys enough for all you do. You've done this, I mean, what, 3 more weeks of season? You know, one regular season, some playoffs, and then NCAAs, and that wraps up 2024. So we're going to have a good time. That's Jay Hossack with George Mason, Brad Rothstadter of UC San Diego, Dan Fran of Lewis, and Theo Edwards of CSUN. That's a mouthful. So I appreciate your contributions and your love of the game.
Thanks for listening to College Volleyball Weekly. Be sure to follow Rob Aspero at The Rob on the Mic on Instagram and at Rob on the Mic on Twitter.